Dear Dhamma friends, according to the schedule, this time is allocated for a Dhamma talk and followed by a question and answer session. So may everyone get settled down and ready, and please give the consent with 3 times, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhasse. නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතු සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතු සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ සූර්යස්ස භික්ඛවේ උදයතෝ ඒතං පුබ්බංගමං ඒතං පුබ්බ නිමිත්තං යදිදං අරුණුග්ගං ඒවමේව කෝ භික්ඛවේ භික්ඛුනෝ අරියස්ස අට්ඨාංගික මග්ගස්ස උදයස්ස ඒතම් පුබ්බංගමං ඒතං පුබ්බ නිමිත්තං යදිදං අප්‍රමාද සම්පදාති තී Dear Dhamma friends, whenever we are attending to this kind of a retreat or paying attention to the development of mindfulness, that our physical attention also must be with some listening to discourses and discussions and surrounded by a conducive conditions, and together with only we will get the alignment or kind of a good mental situation for us to develop a certain amount of concentration. So therefore the Buddha listed few factors as complementary factors as anugraha, that means facilities that one must take care, and one thing is that we are observing precepts. We must be abiding by a moral code or our moral responsibilities, so we know as human beings, civilized beings, we must be abiding by 5 precepts. That is our normal standard. So whenever we come to a retreat like that, usually what we do is we uplift it to higher precepts. That is called silanugaita, or facilitating with moral conduct. The second one is sutta anugrahita, that means listening, or this is what we are going to do this in this hour. Usually in a traditional way, what we do is we get a quotation from the Tipitaka or teaching of the Buddha and try to understand what is the contextual meaning of this kind of discourses, how far can we incorporate that kind of teaching into our life so that we develop certain amount of book knowledge, certain amount of theoretical knowledge, and try to cope up with our meditation, sitting, walking and day-to-day activities. So, in other words, how to develop mindfulness in sitting and how to develop mindfulness in walking and day-to-day activity. Third aspect is that you have to discuss each other among the co-meditators, then only our mind will get brushed up and doubts will be rectified, and we feel like among some true friends. For that we have to discuss it. It is called sakaccha anugrahita, facilitating by discussion, and when that happens, samatha and vipassana, that means tranquility meditation and insight meditation, appear like somewhat easier than without. So that is why in a one day retreat we have allocated this hour for a discourse or a talk, and then it will be followed by a question and answer session. So for this talk I selected a particular discourse delivered by the Buddha. Specifically, you may find in the Sanghita Nikaya, concise collection of the teaching of the Buddha, and that is being known as Appamada Sutta. It has been translated as accomplishment in diligence. So basically what we are going to discuss with the help of this topic or with this discourse, the term meaning of Appamada. Appamada, that is a Pali term, and in Sri Lanka, in Sinhala, also we call Appamade. But in Pali as well as in Sinhala, it is not a very common term. It is not much of a familiar term. Most of the Western people, this has been translated as diligence. So, diligence may have some other meanings too, rather than its spiritual meaning. Whatever it may be, the diligence from the English rendering point of view is a very important aspect. Specifically, it must be mentioned that not only to towards transcendental sphere, but in the secular sphere also. So if you need, if you wish any kind of upliftment, improvement, development, creativity, and living in this very moment in a vigilant way, diligence is a must. And but instead, what happens is, often we self-accusation is there in each of us to the negligence. Negligence means we are not fulfilling the duties in due time, in due context. So therefore, negligence, we can take it as the opposite of diligence. And negligence, it is very, very common term in our day-to-day life. And it's a joke telling that Sri Lanka, whatever we are going to do, we are at least 30 minutes delayed. That is our national character. Whatever we schedule, 30 minutes delayed. Therefore, international airlines given Sri Lanka, UL flights, that is usually late. That is our national airline. So that's so much so, we have gone away from what the Buddha has taught. The Buddha is the very first human being recognize the potential in this term, diligence, and therefore the last word came out of the mouth of the Buddha, appamādena bhikkave sampādet, O monk, fulfill duties diligently because the situation is very transient, so you have to be very diligent, very vigilant. So therefore, the meditation masters, they try to understand the potential of this term or importance of this diligence. They say, whole teaching of the Buddha for 45 years, if you put into a nutshell, that is, we can reduce to diligence. But sorry to say, in our traditional Buddhism or in our day-to-day religious sphere, hardly we have any kind of bearing towards the diligence. So therefore, whenever we are trying to incorporate that into our life, we have to go into a forest. We have to wear white clothes. We have to observe precepts. We have to find equally minded people. And we have to give up all our day-to-day activities. We have to go away from our dear and near ones. We have to go away from our already what we have earned. So much so, preparation must be there for this term to be incorporated and introduced in a proper way. I would say even then it is worth understanding it, because now we got together here is fairly in the middle aged, and if our generation at least going to understand the importance of this, that same message will go to the second generation much earlier than in our case. In my life, I came across this in the at the age of 26, and then onward I try my best, not at the, of course at the beginning, to just to get the meaning of that appamada and then how to incorporate it. I was so slow. It was painfully so. It took me around 10 years to just to get an acquaintance with this term and to get acquaintance with the people, those who are diligent, and to listen, discuss, and that is how it took place. With respect to that, I am talking about the 1979 and 1980. Now, of course, there are a lot of other ways and means for someone to get at least theoretical knowledge and book knowledge on this diligence. So I will try my best to at least to get certain amount of theoretical understanding together with deductive knowledge as well as the direct touch. So we are always now comparing diligence with respect to negligence. Negligence means pamada. Appamada is the diligence. So if you wish any kind of improvement, well-being, productivity, creativity, diligence is the secret. So therefore we can put diligent into the common language. You should do whatever you should do timely. That is the common terms, common sense in the diligence. Doing what you should do timely, punctually, that is the diligence. So that is what we have been taught in the classrooms and in the management technique trainings and personal developments, all the kind of thing. But the Buddha had yet another shade of meaning. You must equally diligent not to do what you should not do. So both has to go hand in hand. Then only the complete meaning of diligence you can feel, and you feel the profundity of the term. So I am not going to teach you doing what you should do in a diligent way, in a punctual way. You all are fairly efficient in that sense, otherwise never come to treat it like this. But I hope by discussing, by sharing, by opening each other, we can find a lot of things, negligence, lot of things we are, our weaknesses in, not to do what we should not do. That is the part we feel very irritated. We find very difficult to understand. It is very sour in taste or astringent in taste. So when and where someone is going to pinpoint that this should not be done, and then hardly your mind will be ready to accept it. So therefore, when and where dictatorship comes to be, or someone come and say this is to do and this is not to do, you usually call they are a bossy kind of people, very difficult to cope up with. So therefore, you reject that kind of arrogance or harsh words. So therefore, even if someone see others' negligence or doing what should not do, what should not be done, and how to communicate it, how to enlighten on that fact. So imagine, out of these two sides, to do what you should do and not to do what you should not do, you won't believe Buddha put not to do what should not do at the beginning. Then only doing what you should do diligently is the second. That is what sabbava passakarana, kusalasa upasampada, sachitta pariyodapana, etang buddhana sasana. The Buddha say, first do no harm, do away with the evil thing, and that is the first and foremost. It is not the teaching of this last Buddha, the Gautama, it's the teaching of all the Buddhas. So our Buddha is conveying the same message. First, do no harm. That is what the Socrates mentioned. Exactly the same thing Buddha mentioned much earlier. Sabbapapa sakarana, do away with all the evil things. So, spiritual meaning or spiritual another shade of meaning is that, and not only that, it must be first. And then only you will understand, or you are qualified to understand, what you should do. But when we are teaching our second generation or disciples anything, we are very sharp to indicate them, this must be done and this should do and all the kind of thing. But what should not do, that side is often in the dark side. Never come to the bright light. So unless otherwise you are self-critical, unless otherwise you have a true man, spiritual friend, you will never get enlightened to that. So you may live even 100 years and you may die off without enlightening into that. That means you have never seen any valuable message from the Buddha. You have not gained any kind of Dhamma message from the this dispensation. And you never see a true man or Sangha in the life. And your life is not much of a spiritual life. So therefore our quest must be always with the help of the interactions, with the help of rapport with others, to understand what is the thing that I should not do. So therefore that in the Buddhist circles it says that doing what you should do is known as generosity. In our day-to-day activities, we generously give it to the people in need. So we know, Sri Lankans, how much we are happy to give dana and sharing with other those who need. But not to do what you should not do is sila. Not to kill, not to steal, not to have sexual misconduct, not to have verbal misdeeds, and not to have intoxication. So you can understand how much our mind is happy with dana, but not so much with sila. So that is the general consent in our society at large. So when and where someone is going to talk about sila, there's restraining from killing, stealing, sexual misconduct and verbal misdeeds and intoxication, it would be like backward. You are not civilized. If you are civilized, you must kill. I am repeatedly telling you, if you are skillful, if you are civilized, you must rob. This is the society today. All the well-to-do people are grabbing like anything. They are always try for their lion's share. And then only think about the majority. So each and every so-called civilized people are great rogues and great robbers. Sexual misconduct, if you are not doing, you are not social. If you are only satisfied with your spouse, so how backward you are. That is the way it is being introduced, and towards that only we are going now. Towards that only we are exposing our younger generation. And if you are not lying, you cannot do business. That is a very common sense. To do business, you must lie. And when you are doing business, you have to take little hot drinks. This is the civilization. You know, it's so crystal clear, Buddha mentioned, they are the worst thing. Killing your well-being, killing your creativity, upliftment. So how crafty in our civilization we have pulled into acceptance, sportsmen, fishing, killing, and all the kind of thing, game hunting, very civilized. And robbing on white papers, very, very civilized. And sexual misconduct, you have to say how many fingers you can bend. So much so you are civilized. And lying, slandering, harsh words, frivolous talks, you can listen from morning to evening in the radio. Total, utter verbal misconduct. from morning to evening in the radio, television channels. From first page to the end in the newspapers, you know, if you are not coming here today, what are you doing for the moment now? You are reading newspapers, listening to radios, and go to television news. It is more than a meal. So you get the whole your day's dosage of the lies, of the unwanted things you must listen. And then you complain, your children are not playing, but they are just in front of a computer. So this is the way it is going on. So therefore, if someone to say that, to understand the diligence, we being human, if we wish, we can be civilized, we can be gentle, we can be understanding each other. So in order to understand, the first and foremost is, each and every living being, love their life, therefore, assure that you are not going to kill anyone, because you are not happy if someone is all of a sudden come and kill you. We will go against the human rights. But when you are killing animal, do you give any that kind of a fair chance for animal to talk? Only the disadvantage is they can't talk. They have no human rights courts. They have no lawyers. And therefore we call this a human world. It's a filthy language. Each and every animal living in the sharing the world in the equal way, but we call we are human, and we are the people make constitutions, we are the making people making political decisions and decide about the future of the planet and the global warming, and we don't give any fair share for the other living beings. And within the human, also, well-true people are interpreting everything, so others has to just to follow the suit. So therefore, the killing, stealing, need no so much of exaggeration or explanation further. Each and everyone can understand with your common sense how much we are negligent and how much we are tend to do this a thing that you should not do. So this is called the human culture. This is called your gentleness, how much you are a cultured person. So therefore, Buddha never, please remember, never implemented commandments. All the other religions are talking about the commandments, Buddha is telling precepts. So Buddha, out of his omniscient knowledge, he laid down the 5 precepts, the human nature. And when you go to the 8 precepts, 9 precepts, 10 precepts, and gone forth as a Samanera, Samaneri, and the bhikkhus, so much of gradation you can do. Whatever you select indicate how much you are civilized. And no one should impose precepts on another person. You are the very person, you have the complete right to accept or reject it. So there we can understand the society at large, how much they are happy to do what they should do, known as dana, and how much they are negligent, you are not to do, therefore shameful when a non-Buddhist or newcomer to a Buddhist from the Western country to come and see here how the society is working. How much they are negligent, how much they are performing that you should not do. So this is the large picture, and internalize it and see how much we are open-minded and diligent to understand the day-to-day, in our day-to-day run, how much things we are doing that you should not do. And that indicates your relationship with the other beings, and your relationship with your own well-being. So therefore, the precepts versus dana is a very good indication. But today's talk is not basically based upon that kind of thing. This is just to exemplify how much we are negligent towards what we should not do. But when we are going further, the Buddha says, the suryasa bhikkhave udayasa etam pubbangama etam pubbanimittam yajjang arunuggam. The Buddha says in the before the sunrise there are a lot of preparations that come under the common term the dawn. First the dawn appear and then the sunrise. Before the dawn, total darkness. And then slowly, slowly in the eastern sky, eastern horizon, you see kind of a color changes. Just light appear, little bit. And then aurora, different shades of colors, brownish red or yellowish red. And then it's increasing the intensity towards the white light. And after white light, the sun arises. So this is the way day to day, the precursor and the foresight you can have, pubbangavan, that means a forerunner and the precursor happens. So the Buddha says exactly like that. If you wish to understand the middle path, if you wish to understand the eightfold factors, etam pubbangamang etam pubbanimittang yadidang appamada sampada. Diligence is the forerunner, diligence is the precursor for you to understand the middle path, for you to understand the noble eightfold path or the path knowledge. So, all of us, definitely, we are in want of, or we are searching about the fourth noble truth, and we know that is the maximum in a human life what we can accomplish, and it appear like very difficult, it appear like not in this very world, sometimes it says not in this dispensation, we have to wait for the Buddha the next Mitteya to happen, so much so we have tried to get a distance. But the Buddha, to make that difficult task somewhat simple and positive, he says, as far as you are diligent, it is like a dawn before the sunrise, you are reaching to the fourth noble truth. Is something possible, not impossible, even though it is difficult. So therefore, not only the difference between the generosity and the moral responsibilities, we can see along the same argumenting how one can change one's view or micha ditti, samma ditti, how can change one's view by developing diligence. That is what, in a sense, train your mind and change your brain. So when and where you train the mind in such a continuous way and in the proper way, ultimately the brain circuit, earlier thought it is hardwired circuit, but now they found the plasticity of the brain, so therefore your likings and disliking, your personality traits, your view, your hobbies, everything can be reshuffled, everything can be reorganized. So don't try to start with that difficult task. Instead, what you have to do is be diligent as much as possible, not only to do what you should do, but when and where you are in the meditative mood, always you must take care what not to do, what you should not do. So how today's hour or our introduction to the sitting and walking can go parallel with this kind of idea. Supposing if we wish to develop this noble eightfold path or correct view, sometimes called broader view or broad-mindedness, how our diligence or mindfulness or vigilance going to help support that kind of a broadening of our mind. Before going to detail, I would like to give yet another comparison. Often in the canon as well as in the commentaries, this appamada term is being put as a synonym with sati. Appamada is being translated as diligence, and the sati is being translated as the mindfulness. So appamada and sati, diligence and the mindfulness, considered as synonyms and equal terms. So therefore, I may mixly, in a mixed manner, may use the diligence and the mindfulness, thinking, considering both of them as synonyms. So today we took our day to develop mindfulness, to introduce the mindfulness. So as I try to mention in the sitting meditation, as a guided meditation, when and where you try to incorporate mindfulness as a beginner, best thing is to control as much as possible variables and to focus on one particular changing thing. That the best example is when you come to a meditation center, when you come to a meditation hall, and when you assume a sitting posture, when you close your eyes, that indicates you have to nothing to worry about seeing. Our faculty of visual objects and seeing is temporarily closed. You do it consciously, to close your eyes. So therefore, if at all it is something you see in the mind eye, what is you being, you can see once you close your eyes. And the sounds wise, there may be some sounds, but they are not addressing to you. So therefore, you can do away with listening. Even the listening happens, it is not, you can, hearing can happen, but you are not supposed to listen. I hope you understand the difference between the hearing and listening. So, whatever the instructions, you have to listen. Well, the other thing, you have to just, you can note them as hearing and you have to forget about, because you are fairly away from your day-to-day responsibilities. So, therefore, if at all any responsibility, it is to adhere to the timetable. So, you are, whatever hearing, you can just forget about. Listening can be the only thing helping you in developing your theoretical understanding. And the third one is the nose and the smelling. Usually it is not much of a problem. That is also temporarily closed. And then your taste buds. When you are sitting, you are not talking, you are not supposed to talk, and not tasting anything. So that is also resting. And only the thing you are focusing is your the tactile sensation in the body. Throughout that, you must make sure no much of seeing, no much of hearing, smelling, touching, but keeping the mindfulness with tactile sensation. That is why you bring it to the body. Whenever you try to bring the attention to the body, that we can say that is what you should do. What you should do is, when and where it is possible, bring the attention to your body so that you make it very pleasant and present to the mind. That is why you sit very symmetrically, relax, and ask the mind to come and dwell inside your body. But meanwhile, there are a lot of things you should not do. So, unless otherwise you know both the lists, you may be worrying much about that your accomplishment of diligence is not successful, because mind is often not in the here and now, not in the body, instead going out. So, therefore, what you should not do is not to take interest about the rest of the world. Imagine, even after you getting one day, even after you getting a fairly conducive condition, even you make a conscious decision, mind to not to go out, but you can see how much it is unruly, ungovernable, it is jumping outwardly, daydreaming, fantasizing. So this is the what you have to understand, and not only you try to keep the mind inside, as much as possible you must try to not to let it go out. That is the way you are motivation, that is your adverting of the mind, and they are keeping inside appear very boring. keeping inside appear very monotonous, but instead mind is always happy to run out, daydreaming, fantasizing, yesterday, tomorrow, others and other places. So this is often when and where a newcomer try to apply the mind to that kind of a task, it's an utter disappointment. The utter disappointment. There is no one in the world. All of a sudden, soon you put the mind to this kind of endeavorance, mind will fall calm and quiet on the primary object, that is to say, sitting meditation, sitting posture, and do away with all the rest of the world. Never. The point that you have to make sure is, when and where mind is going out, wandering, daydreaming, you feel disappointed thinking this is my mistake. You feel disappointed thinking this is lack of precepts. You feel disappointed and accuse the mind, telling it is going out. And you are asking a golden formula or shortcut to keep the mind inside. That means you are not ready to accept. This is a universal fact. And everyone thinks going out is my own mistake. This is how you personalized mistakes. We are masters to claim worries. When and where something goes wrong, we are very happy to talk with the neighbors and put a SMS or call someone and say, you see this and that and all the kind of thing. So, whole the full world is full of news regarding tragedies, disappointments, worries, depressions, and so much. Each and every talk can be like a frivolous talk. Destructive. Because your basic attribution is wrong. You consider this mind is mine. I have asked it to be here and now, but it is running out. You never report, I observed for the first time, mind is unruly, ungovernable. So it's the highest truth in the Buddha's teaching. Instead you put it, you see what a naughty mind that I am having. Today only I came to know, when and where I put into a task, it is running out. So your presentation is completely michaditti. You are putting personification. Sometimes you attribute, this is because other person was talking. That is, you are personifying other person also. And everything you find, you put into the ego or atta or kind of a personification, and ultimately end result is a disappointment. So imagine how many one day retreats you have to go through to understand this is not my mind. Now only I understand the human mind. Not only one day retreats, you may go 3, 4, 10 day retreats, and after so much of discussions only you will come to know, this is not a personal mistake, now only I open to the subject, so much so, so far, I was thinking my mind is very obedient, very proficient, very efficient, very productive. My children are also very obedient and my servants also very obedient. But when and where you come and close your eyes, everything go for six. We never happy to understand this truth. So therefore, unless otherwise you understand the diligence in the both side, it is a must, this is not this what you should do, this is you what not what you should do, and all the time you must monitor your view with both the sides. The way out is, that is how the mindfulness is defined in the Western way, the choiceless awareness. They say your mindfulness, of course in the Western way of thinking and the literature, is choiceless awareness, you do not let the eye to see, ear to listen, nose to smell, taste buds to taste, but open the mind to the body, and that is also to passive breathing, not any intentional or volitional activities. You put a restraint or discipline yourself as much as possible not to make conscious movements or conscious talking, and just keep the body and try to observe it. When you're observing, you can see how the mind is working, and when it is happening, you must be diligent, you must be vigilant, not to have a choice. Of course, you know that my discipline is to keep the mind here now I am, and it is going out not due to my agenda. The mind has its own agenda, so therefore to understand who am I, what is the kind of a mindset I am having, so you have to put into such a task. Once you put it there, you can see the behavior of the mind is never what you expect. And therefore, if you have a choiceless awareness, whatever you observe, you can report as a second person. But hardly you can do it. You always, all the mistakes, you think it is my mistake, and you start writing with desperation, disappointments, and frustrated. So therefore, your presentation, when your other person, listener, also feel, you start with something negative. So therefore, to have a choiceless awareness, that is the dawn, the sunrise is the open-mindedness, the broad view, that is what the Buddha appreciate. So therefore, you have to understand the mindfulness always have the qualities or precursor or forerunner kind of symptoms towards the Eight Noble Path. So, open-mindedness is starting with choiceless awareness. More and more you observe, you may reiterate, you must reconfirm or resolute the open-mindedness, or other words, the choiceless awareness is a kind of a thing. Moment you learn the art, as far as your awareness is with the adjective of choicelessness, no tension. It is immediate. Moment you have a choice, tension is the shadow. When and where you learn choiceless awareness, no traces of shadows, or no traces of tension, or frustration, or torturing, or burning nature can happen. So, you have to train with this theoretical understanding in your hand. Keep on practicing where the mind goes out, or come back and practice on the primary object. Always try to be choiceless, be aware. That choiceless awareness not only, please remember, not only keep you away from that, at least in that particular moment, free of frustration, but it gives us such a crystal clear communication. To communicate to other person choicelessly, you are like the mature judge, without taking the partial part and partial of the district, he passed the judgment impartial way, because he has no preconceived ideas, premeditated ideas. That is the maturity. So that judge is inside you, but you never employ him. You always give your decision, inference colored by your likings and disliking and preconceived ideas, your personality, your view, your reflections and everything. So therefore, you never can write a scientific paper. Scientific paper means you are just an observer, you write what you see. This experiment, this observation, this inference. We have three columns in grade 8. We learn Parikshaneya, Nirikshaneya, Nigamaneya in Singhala. In the Nirikshaneya, the observation, if you are going to add inferences, judgmental, deductive knowledge, that means you are completely mixing up your communication, internal communication, external communication is completely out of it. So therefore, this choiceless awareness is a very high potential kind of a tactic. But the thing is, we feel when and where the observation becomes choiceless, no motivation, no, it feels very boring, it appears very monotonous. Because it is not going to give any kind of a food for your ego. It is not going to give any kind of a food for your conceit. It is not going to give any kind of a lion's share for your account. So therefore, when and where you learn this choiceless awareness, you find the mind becomes universal, but motivation. Why? What is the purpose that I should develop the choiceless awareness? So therefore, you have to be a religious. You have to be spiritual. You have to have a faith. At the beginning, till it prove by itself, or resolution comes to know, come into being, you have to develop this choiceless awareness. So when I practice, often other co-practitioners never mention sati or any kind of thing. Even the mindfulness was too technical for us. We were practicing choiceless awareness. And after long time only, I came to know Ken Wilber. He has written the book known as No Boundary. He is the person who coined this term, and it's an American person. And now onward, that has become a kind of a pit, a coin word for the mindfulness. This choiceless awareness is leading you to broad-mindedness and the broader view, that is to say, samadhiti or broader view or unbiased view. So this one, please remember, not the thing that you should develop. It is already in you. You never use. Even if you are to live on this earth for 100 years, unless otherwise you practice mindfulness under the guidance of the teaching of the Buddha, and then only you are going to employ it, this kind of a way to look into. So you can use this choiceless awareness only to the breath, because it is a very neutral object, not to the seeing object, not to the hearing object, not to the smell, not to the taste, because they are very prompting. It is very misleading. So therefore, Buddha says, close everything and just focus the attention. The in-breath is equal to out-breath, or in-breath and out-breath you are looking at in the equal way. Not only that, when the mind is run to the listening, just be aware, choicelessly. When it's going to engage in feeling, bad feeling, pain, be aware. And when it is thinking, be aware and report in a scientific way. If you are going to grasp that kind of a thing, very quickly you can understand that's a value of listening, a value of book knowledge, value of the theoretical knowledge, but always it is against the grain. Our mind is always colored. And then second thing is samma sankappa, your thinking about tomorrow is conditioned by yesterday. So then when and where you try to establish this choiceless awareness, you can understand how much your thinking is colored by the craving to increase the game, fame, and all the kind of thing, or your conceit, or your egocentric ideas. So when and where you are exaggerating the fact, your exaggeration, proliferation, and growing is to more and more increase your desire, the craving. And more to have your one-upmanship, the conceit, and to establish, I am the person who did it. I am the person who discovered it. I am the person who is telling you, like us, all the time you are putting the peg and confirming the reference point that as I, that is how our thinking happens. So therefore, more and more you to learn this choiceless awareness and the broad-mindedness, you can understand to communicate, you need know so much of exaggeration or long talks, unless otherwise bewildered, unless otherwise you are proliferating within you in order to achieve some indirect objects. That is how it happens. So therefore, more and more you to understand the choiceless awareness, even in the sitting meditation, or maybe in sometimes little bit in the walking meditation, you may understand this very thing that you observe to communicate to another person or report in the interviews how much our mind is running here and there, not to be short to the point. We always exaggerating. So each and every exaggeration is nothing but to maximize the craving, maximize your desire or your conceit or the egocentric ideas. So at the beginning you never observe as and when it happens. But it is the matter of the spiritual friend to let you know when you are talking one issue again and again and proliferating, just to listen and tell and go back and see what you are going to maximize. Either tanha or ditchi or mana, that means a desire or conceit or the egocentric idea. So the Buddha, if you are lucky to talk with him, is like a clear, crystal clear mirror. Soon you go there, your image will appear in the Buddha mirror. So if someone is assimilating Buddha, he also just nothing but a mirror. But most of the mirrors what we have here is like shaving mirrors. It is exaggerating. When we are shaving, we are using a kind of a mirror. We call... And the other one is the side mirror we find in the vehicles, that is concave and convex. So no mirror is equal. But our other friends also, either it is exaggerating or reducing. So therefore our language, our communication is always full of exaggeration or deep lowering, underestimation. So to communicate, the best way is to have interviews and discussions where try to talk short to the point. Directly what you have to talk. Then you find how much we are misusing the language, how much we are misusing the words. And the Buddha, his best method is, if everything is okay, he is silent. If something wrong, he exactly pinpoint, this is what I have to tell. And he make again the system silent. So now in our parties, the completely opposite. Everyone is there in their view. Other person has to listen and keep on chattering. Ultimately, you feel so exhausted. So that is the difference when in the understanding this vichā saṅkappa and sammā saṅkappa, more and more you communicate directly in the interview or in a discussion, you feel other person also equally good as you. There's no individual good and bad. It's a matter of communication. More and more you try to practice in a, as a group, you develop kind of a friendship, develop kind of a relationship. It is more than blood relationship. Our understanding and communication starts visasa paramanyati, trustworthiness, and it is more than the blood relationship. So my Burmese master used to say, even though we are living in a scattered way in the whole globe, as far as we are diligent, our life blood circulating, diligence is our life blood, as far as it is circulating, our friendship, our mutual understanding, trustworthiness never become deteriorated. Each and everyone, even you back at home, if you are diligent, you are contributing towards your mindfulness society, and ultimately the communication will very easy, time to come, and more communication become easy, your talking will be reduced. If the communication upset, you will be a chatterbox. Keep on chattering, but no communication. So therefore, when the sammāditti, sammāsaṅkappa come in line with, you like silence. And therefore, whatever the word you are talk, that is to communicate Dhamma. not about these other frivolous talks. So therefore, you understand in the past how much you use the terms and words and kind of thing. Humans are the only beings can talk. And they are the utter misusing people. That is why the wars and all the problems in the world because of the miscommunication. Today we are in an information technology age. You can understand how chaotic the world is. Even though whatever the technology and kind of thing, so much of misunderstanding. Still the bad people are exploiting the situation. So therefore, when and where you go into the mindfulness, we put SMS slowly, silently, mindfully. And you understand more and more silent talks or silent sermon become more profound communicating. But when you go back home, that is the first and foremost criticism. Others are going to level against you. Earlier you used to chatter, now you are not talking. So this complaint indicates who are the true people to associate and who are the true friends. But don't let them know, please. Otherwise you ask in trouble. They will put you into an asylum, telling something wrong in your brain. So when and where you are talking reduces, everyone get antagonized thinking that something wrong with me, he is not talking, she is not talking. So everyone consider not talking as a kind of a disease. But you may understand whenever you become diligent that before talking also you are conscious, while talking also you are conscious, after talking also you are conscious. If something goes wrong, and without hesitation you can go and apologize, tell, just this has happened, I am sorry, I have disturbed you, that was not my meaning, but please excuse me. No problem. Because you know what is happening. Or otherwise, we can say everything is gone under a voice recorder. You know everything has been recorded. So therefore, nothing to just argue, just based on the fact. So mindfulness is giving such a responsibility, not only the words, even the deeds. Samma kammanta, whatever you do, it decides the next moment. Whatever you do in the present moment, decides the next moment. So therefore, basic thing you have to do is, be aware of what you should not do. And try to not to do. This is the only criterion. When that is happening, the thing you should do will automatically come into being. As far as you take the responsibility about not to do what you should not do, don't let the others to interpret it. You also are a human being. Exactly we are, our likings and dislikings are equal from in the absolute terms. So you can understand the society, and therefore if you take care about disciplining or restraining yourself not to do what you should not do, each and everything you can do in a better way. Anything what you have done so far, we may be very expert in particular field, we may be very creative, but even then, as far as you are always looking forward to get rid of what is not to do, day by day improvement is happening. So therefore, many people think this spiritual development will reduce the productivity, will reduce the efficiency, will reduce the well-being, but they are not practical people. When and where you try to be mindful, you will not beat on the bush. You can just shoot onto the rabbit. Your mindfulness is giving enough situation, no much of tension, so you can just hit the target. So when I was working for 6 years, I try my best to do one thing at a time and that done well. I don't care about anything, so ultimately that once finished, I will go to the next. And I was working about maybe 18 hours a day, all the tasks. But still, I feel just like battery getting charged as the car is running. No one can understand how that happens. So my boss came and asked, what are you going to maximize? I am not drinking, I don't have a girlfriend, I don't have a car, nothing. I get the higher salary at that time. Then he asked that, still you are fighting and trying, what is that? Then I told, that is up to you to decide the French benefits and the salary. My thing is to be aware, be mindful, and whatever I am going to do. Enormous. You don't believe the capacity you have within you. So far you are in an utter rut. You are in such a blinkers and you are bragging about your own skillfulness. It is nothing. It is nothing when compared to the human brain is concerned. By more and more you are bragging, understand you are such a frog in a well. In order to let the mind bloom, to see, that is called neurobics, new circuits in the brain to work, always life must be a challenge. Always life must be an adventurous. As far as you are, Sunday morning you start, and up to, until the Friday evening, you go in the same cycle. You are just like a man machine in a cogwheel is running, you are just a cog. Machine is running, you can't accelerate, you can't decelerate. If you are going to accelerate, you will be cut off. That's a man machine. So ultimately, you will run your whole life for someone's agenda. At the old age, you will suffer as to no living. You are just trying to live. So as far as you are mindful about what you are going to do, simple is you have to do little slowly and apply the principle one thing at a time and that done well. And when it is happening, you see the capacity. Later, of course, I will assure, later you will learn slowly, slowly the multitasking. But at the beginning, you reduce, fix all the variables and specialize one thing, develop the skillfulness in breathing or in walking. Whatever you do, ultimately, the light of mindfulness, when the dawn happens, when the sunrise happens, everything will be enlightening. So therefore, whatever you do, you know what you are doing and be mindful in the physical sense, and ultimately you will understand the human machine. It is the best in the world for any kind of thing. And to put into maximum, you must take care about the present moment. Don't worry about the future. Don't worry about the past mistakes. Don't worry about what is the neighbor is. Don't worry about who is your boss is. Don't worry about whom depending upon you is. But we keep the mind in the present moment. And ultimately your organization of your life, physical part, at the beginning appear like little chaotic. But slowly, slowly, organization going to happen. And that is leading to your livelihood. You will be more and more considerate on whether I am exploiting someone, whether I am exploiting the nature, whether I am exploiting other beings. If it is so, your sensitivity will be very increasing, and ultimately you can't live that life. You have to always give an equal sharing with the living beings and non-living things, and therefore your livelihood, it must be very simple living, high thinking kind of thing. And don't go for luxuries, don't go for consumerization, just do for the utility value. The best example the Buddha given is the monk, how to live in the live upon others like a beggar, and then do the live upon with the bare minimum and requirement only on the utility value. So that may be somewhat difficult, but later when and where you see your good friend, noble friend, true people, you may understand they are living in such a relaxed way because their livelihood never give self-accusation. But we can't go for 100% pure livelihood in this, on this earth, never. Some or the other we are exploiting. Nature animals, other human beings. This thing is to reduce it. As much as possible, reduce to the minimum and you will learn the art. And when that happens, only the Buddha assures through the mindfulness, your battery, your morning to evening, the openness, the diligence, the energizing of your inner battery is continuous. If you are not adjusting your livelihood, you feel so much ups and downs in your energy wave. Sometimes you are so lethargic, sometimes you are so enthusiastic, it will come and come to a equilibrium when and where the livelihood become very, it is not unjust, it must be just. And then this with this mindfulness, you will see morning to evening mindfulness. Earlier as a beginner, it is a unthinkable task. You can only be mindful in sitting meditation, in the meditation center, when there is no sounds and all the kind of thing. Slowly, slowly, when it is developing, easily you may find a relationship to the walking meditation and later to the day-to-day activities. Slowly, slowly, mindfulness is increasing. And ultimately, from the morning to evening, you judge your day by the improvement of your mindfulness. Or second thing, you can understand your judgment, how much mindful friends you are associating. Both of them are synonymous. More and more you come mindful, more and more mindful friends going to come. If you are not mindful, this whole world is chaotic. More and more you come mindful, you see under such a chaotic situation, there are a lot of people try to find the equilibrium. They find it. And more than what you expect, it's a higher proportion of people are mindful, but they are not showing it. They are not bragging upon that. They hide their qualities. So more and more you develop, you will understand the mindful societies, mindful people, and may not be in the place you are searching about. May not find that qualities in the popular people that you believe. Not to the extent that you know. But when you keep open the mindfulness, you won't believe for the present moment, whole world, internet, just like internet, all the mindful people are got together. There's a network is happening, irrespective of the religion, irrespective of the ordained, unordained, female, male, that mindfulness is now in a momentum. For the last 30, 40 years, it is developing. So soon you will get plugged in, and ultimately you feel the global relationship. And that is how the mindfulness is spreading now. So we have come to this life, come to the on this earth in a proper time. It is beyond our control, but we are lucky enough. I feel sorry about my parents. But they had no. I know they are better people than me. They're very good people. I am such a the unpredictable, naughty fellow. But anyway, in a proper time, I got the mindfulness, so I can hide my bad thing and still appear like a monk. But the unpredictable fellow. But the mindfulness is the one keeping all the time, everything in balance. So I am fully living. Totally. But I feel in that sense, when Sri Lanka is earning independence, and even the before, and the generations, they had so much of patriotic ideas, but the essence of the Dhamma was missing. So therefore, we are born to the Buddha Jayanti, 1956, the change. So we are now in a better side, so therefore, don't miss the bus. Always try to keep up with yourself, and then slowly, slowly, when you go there, you start the mindfulness society. And the greatest thing is, once you learn the art of mindfulness and the definition of mindfulness and how to live with mindfulness, the concentration is not the what you expected. That concentration is very momentary. That momentary concentration going to serve your task Even though you have conventional concentration that the people, some of the people expect. So mindfulness is going to give kind of a very dynamic, very momentary concentration, and that is why some of the Westerners, they say, Buddhism went to Western countries because of mindfulness, not due to the concentration. People expect concentration as the main thing because it is dittadhamma sukha. Then and their happiness is there in the concentration. But for that concentration, the external factors, conducive factors, lot of things are available. You have to be a forest monk. Go to forest and live the whole life. But as far as you are based upon the mindfulness, that very functional happiness you can gain through the concentration, kind of a concentration that is to call momentary concentration. And when and where you understand it, you know definitely wherever we may be, we are on the way back home. We are coming back to the nature. We are coming back to the middle path. We are coming back to the comfort zone. We are coming back to the least frictional path. So your past is the only guideline for you to understand from the friction to lesser friction. From the uncomfortable area to the comfort zone. From the unmindfulness to mindfulness, and from the tension to reduction of the tension. So when that happens, you need no any other person's witnessing or comparison or judgmental mind. So therefore, more and more you based on the mindfulness, you day by day experience with respect to the time you invest, how much the tension is releasing, how much you come back to the comfort zone. So this kind of a secular kind of a criterion never stop at that level. Once it is gained the momentum, it go beyond the secular level and transcendental. So present day, specifically on the one day retreat and kind of thing, we try to introduce mindfulness on these secular benefits, but don't think it is limited at that level. So once it come up to a certain level, of course you will gain more and more deep dhamma as well as good noble friends. Therefore your objective itself will evolve from the secular to the transcendental level. So I hope that today you have all have taken a good step, and time to come you may experience more and more deep diligence. And with that remark, I would like to sum up the today's talk. Thank you very much for listening. Now we are taking little time for question and answers.